This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Vayner Nation, how are you? Excited to be in the office to do this podcast. Two lovely gentlemen that I will introduce in a second. But first of all, I just want to say thank you to the community. It's been an amazing couple years as I've started to like hit the world post-COVID, though it's not fully out. I literally had four people this morning email Kaylin, Rob, like just like wow. Bombarded. So I think this is kind of what always happens. But nonetheless, I think the world is gathering itself on dealing with the pandemic. And as I get more and more about, Super Bowl this last weekend for my friend's birthday, just as I hit the streets of the world, just completely blown away by the kindness and admiration of the people coming up to me and thanking me for the content, and I thank you in return. And it was very top of mind for me, so I wanted to start this podcast episode with that. I also continue on the journey this year with interviews that are interesting to me, and I think you could tell by the interviews I've done this year, even closer to me. This is one of those scenarios because what we're about to talk about is something I'm very passionate about. Day one, the startup we're about to talk about with the co-founders here is a startup that I think is attacking a subject matter that's very near and dear to my heart. I think the world is evolving. I think that is going to require entrepreneurs. I think there's a lot of strengths and weaknesses in everything. Government, education systems. Entrepreneurship has plenty of weaknesses, including when it gets super popular like it has in the last decade, and a lot of people enter it even though they aren't meant for it, and it leads to a lot of anxiety and judgment that is very hard on entrepreneurs. And if you're not built for that, it can be very challenging. On the flip side, what entrepreneurship does more than anything, in my opinion, as an entity and energy in the world, is it creates the things we need. And I think right now in this time of transition, Web 2, Web 3, technology, we need things and startups to attack the realities of people's lives. And I think college was an incredible innovation. But I think that we need stuff for people. And I think when Phil Taranto first told me about what you two were doing, Phil is my right hand and my partner in my investing, it really struck a chord. And so with that set up, why don't you two introduce yourselves and tell us what you guys do.
Thanks, Gary.
You don't have to look in camera. What's up, camera?
Well, first, I'm doing it. Appreciate you having us. Andrew here for everyone listening, co-founder of Day One with my partner, Rahul. Day One is our startup. We built it. It's about 2 years old now. And I kind of go back there to say, we launched Day One in the early days of the pandemic. You kind of referenced that we're just sort of coming back to life a little bit. And it was really in the summer of 2020 when we were launching Day One. Rahul and I, we come from different backgrounds. I come from the startup world. He comes from the social impact world. He was doing investing. I was building startups. But in that summer of 2020, we were feeling what we felt like millions of people were feeling. They were, you know, completely cut loose. They were moving out of the city. They were leaving their 9-to-5s, or at least thinking about it. And there was just like energy of entrepreneurship. And so what we built back then was we built the community that we wanted ourselves, right? We were all going remote. We built this virtual community that was more than just a Slack. You know, it was intentionally built to get entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial people, right? Way more than just, most of the folks who joined our community would not have called themselves founders at the time.
Right. They had entrepreneurial tendencies, but were executives.
They were executives. They were. I'm looking around at these buildings. Like they were here, right? Now maybe they were in their apartments in Brooklyn, but they were isolated and they wanted to do something. They had that drive. They didn't know what to do, and so we gave them a room to come together to build these relationships.
How long had you two known each other prior to starting the company?
6 months.
We met in the way that entrepreneurs meet, which is at one of these networking events.
Physically.
Physically.
Yeah.
Right, so before they
hands.
But then it was, I mean, this is a great story. You can probably tell Rahul, but like, as you know, I put a landing page up for Day One and Rahul applied to it. Literally.
Yeah, so I always joke that I'm a Gen Xer stuck in a Gen Z body. Started out in oil and gas, then did social sector work, lived in India building ultimate frisbee leagues for village girls. For a year and a half doing service work. Loved the nonprofit side of things. I came back and basically set up and ran fundraising 501c3 shops for international girls orgs. So that's where I learned how to fundraise. A lot of my board members were VC folks. So I really kind of got integrated into what's happening and how innovation starts. A lot of the programs that I was raising money for was around social entrepreneurship and people around the world with little to nothing, right? But they're trying to innovate education and water scarcity and all these other things. But then as I want to do, like every couple of years, I switch careers. And so I got into innovation about 3 years ago in New York. When he was still at Human Ventures, I went and we met, and I was kind of our customer. I have all the things on paper that you need in terms of grit and spike and domain expertise and just the want, but I didn't have any of that formal education on what to do. How do you validate an idea? We had a really nice conversation. Said, you're a good dude, but you know, not a good fit for what we're looking for, which was more of the classic venture top 0.01% of people that will invest in building an idea. I was in a number of other communities, and then 6 months later, summer of 2020, my buddy Andrew, who I met for 20 minutes, had a LinkedIn post saying, hey, I'm starting this community for early stage founders looking to have their hand held a little bit to like walk you through the process.
I apologize. So you're investing, and summer of 2020, by the way, it's been so long that I thought this was the summer before. So this is, COVID happens in March. This is the real question for me, curiosity. You start this because you think this could be a lead gen community for your investing, or you were ready to live your hypothesis?
I was ready to leave. So I was.
You wanted to operate, no longer bet on operators.
Exactly. I was at this venture studio. I was always the bridesmaid, not the bride, right?
Yep.
I was helping all these entrepreneurs build these businesses.
And did you have like the human belief of like, this, wait a minute, these guys and gals that I'm helping, this is just you talking to yourself, and we're always, hopefully, actually this is something I'm trying to get more people to be, I was about to say we're always our biggest fan. I've come to learn for the last 15 years, most people aren't their biggest fan, which is pretty much the framework of all the content I'm trying to make, which is make everyone a bigger fan themselves so they can be nice to others as a byproduct. But you had a moment that makes a lot of sense to me, which is why I'm jumping in. You must have been like, wait a minute, this business, they wouldn't even have done that if I didn't say this in the first meeting or that. And all of a sudden, you're seeing an exit and you're saying, wait a minute, even if I just said, hey, let me be your co-founder, I might have made 10 million bucks instead of having this salary where I was the core, you know, must have happened.
It was even more than you're saying. The job I had.
It was even worse.
It was the job I had at this venture studio was I was the sort of right-hand person to all these entrepreneurs coming through. It was my job to help them go from literally a blank whiteboard to an idea, to an investable idea, to, you know, they flew the coop, scaled the business, but I was a conveyor belt helping people launch businesses.
What was the biggest success, whether you had any impact or a ton of impact, we don't need to get into that. What was the big, I think it'd be fun for the listeners, what was the biggest success that came through the conveyor belt? Has there been one yet?
A company called Tiny Organics.
Of course.
So Tiny Organics, the two founders came in.
I'm an investor.
They were trying to build something in the baby space. They were trying to build something. They thought they wanted to build, they had a kind of cool idea around a baby book idea.
Yep.
And we're like, let's walk this back, take your passion for moms and parents, and let's go tackle this basically stagnant market, baby food. And so they're at their A, they just raised 30 million bucks or something.
They're on their way.
They're on their way. So there's a few others.
Right, so did you yourself, when COVID hit in March, like, had this been sitting in your head for 18 months and you're like, this is now the moment?
No, I literally had the same, I think, realization people had, which was like, things were like, I was like, I'm not working at the office anymore. Like, I'm starting to see things with some fresh eyes.
Well, that.
And
I like a good fresh eyes.
And the thing I saw was some of Rahul's situation of like, there's people knocking on the doors. So, you know, we built half a dozen businesses a year. That's pretty good for a studio.
Yep.
We probably turned away 500 founders a year.
Yep.
Very, very politely. Amazing.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Got to meet people. And so what about those 495 founders?
Right, you intuitively know and knew and probably saw, here are 17 no's that went on to do something.
They do something, but they're not getting any
support. But it was
from
a place of empathy, right? So he's building businesses, he talks to 100, gets to build 16. I'm investing as an angel, like have 100 conversations, invest in 5. The thing that we bonded over with the little time that we spent together was the empathy of like, the next 100, 200, 300, right now in the marketplace, they're just basically given a pass.
Yep.
And they don't have a place to go, a community where they can just figure out the next building blocks to be able to get the yes, to be able to get in.
Right, there's no tangible digital infrastructure for that community.
So we wanted to build for that community because
that was the hypothesis.
That kept us up at night.
That's the hypothesis. Yeah, and then, you know, we're now like literally it's almost 2 years into this business.
And one more time, because I know we're bouncing around being empathetic to the audience. in most simple, literal definition form, what does the business do exactly, black and white?
So day one, we run a fellowship. It's a community, but we call it a fellowship because it's much more intentional. It's, you know, we are building relationships among these members. It's a curated group, and it's for very, very early stage entrepreneurs.
And is it free?
No, so it's okay. A membership-based community. You've heard of YPO.
Yes.
You know, you've heard of these, and if you Google around, there's others, super curated, very expensive, and you have to have made $1 million. You have to make $15 million.
Okay? Yep.
Day one is like that, but for folks in these office buildings.
Right. Right.
Who have an itch.
So do people apply or anybody can pay?
So you apply. We vet not for the quality of the idea, because we know you're going to change, as much for your ambition and talent.
Day one's company makes a subjective call on humans based on its protocol to the best of its ability.
We're looking for fit.
Right?
We're looking for people who want to build our
community. But that's the truth, right? Behind, like, at some level, like, I always, people are always like, that's not, like last night,
sure.
The Oscars, forget about all the chaos, just the core part of the Oscars. Like, I was talking to somebody, I was like, no, this, they were like, huh, and I was, I'm not gonna go too deep into it. I'm like, no, that's everything.
Right.
Everything is a subjective call. Yeah.
Everything is a call.
Everything is a subjective call. And people act as if there's, nobody wants technology, like technology bad, and then they want everything to be technology. If humans are involved, it is subjective.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I rate wine, when somebody, let's use empathy since you brought it up,
yep.
When somebody rates this, like Robert Parker, Wine Spectator, when I did Wine Library TV, it's not right, it's a subjective call.
Yeah.
I think it's important because I have a funny feeling a lot of people are about to apply to day one through this podcast, and the ones that get rejected, I just want to remind, it's not rejection, there was humans behind whatever, what, I have no idea what your infrastructure is on this, but they made a subjective call to the best of their ability.
We focus on EQ. The idea is like giving people a place that are pre-momentum, pre-revenue, pre-everything, to still have that same level of support that you
so,
put in a
so keep going. Right, it's you apply, you get approved. What happens next?
So we onboard folks in cohorts, right? And there's a lot of parallel to a university, although I think that's where we're going to disrupt that, right? Like the 4-year college, the 2-year MBA, but you join, you have a cohort, you have a class. We do things to get you embedded and integrated. It's virtual, and so you know we can't just throw you into a Zoom room, right? There's a lot of intentionality to make the community tight. But then we let the power of the community go, right? We're facilitating connections, but you're building. You're working on your ideas, your business. You're collaborating, you're finding people. We're greasing the skids and helping people connect.
So there's some tech community and education infrastructure that
platform,
you guys are humaning on top of as curators to push it along the way.
Yeah, I mean,
and how much does it cost?
It's $9.99 a year right now. It's probably the lowest price.
$1,000.
Yep. Yeah, $1,000 a year. We, I'm an educator from prior life. Rahul has a background in education. We think all day about how do you.
Is it structured fluidly or is there marking periods?
There's literally a mix. Right?
Okay.
There's both a timeline that's fluid, choose your own adventure, meet the people you want to meet, come to the sessions and the workshops you want to come to, and then there's other structure where if you
so both.
Are about to fundraise, come to our fundraise sprint. If you're about to, you know.
So is a fundraise sprint inclusive of the $9.99 a year? So everything's inclusive.
It's like going to college where you pay $50,000 a year.
I've heard.
Classes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So,
so we're trying to make it as simple as possible. You know,
how's it going?
2 years in, we've had about 250 fellows come through our doors. You know, early days, it was awesome to see like a year and a half in, fellows pivot and launch new products. Fellows raise money, fellows, you know, team up, build businesses together. Very diverse, very global, you know, probably 20 countries represented.
Is the hypothesis based on taking executive and helping her or him figure out themselves to decide if they want to be an entrepreneur? Have you already, or is it, I've decided I want to be an entrepreneur, or is it both?
All of the above.
There is a both. There's an explore and build track that we, that's our biggest bifurcation, right?
So, because I think the explore part is a big business.
It's huge.
If I think about it from a businessman lens,
yep.
Is it worth, if you guys get great at it, you might be, say you're great at it now, and I'm sure it's better than just me sitting and pondering in my own head, it's probably worth it for a lot of people on earth to pay $1,000 for the year to figure out if they should make the jump. Because if you think about why most people don't do it, they're scared. And they're scared financially. I make 68K, I make 238K doing X. I wanna start this Raspberry Jam business. I wanna start this, right? I wanna start this, you know, legal assistant business. I wanna start whatever. But what if I can't? Most people don't realize they can get another job. Right now with the great resignation, like what's going on, I think it's the greatest job to try, or the greatest time to ever try, because if you fail, getting back into another job isn't gonna be as hard as people think.
One of the biggest things our fellows have told us is that it's lonely, right? So you can be an executive somewhere, you're a smart person, but it's all in your head.
Always.
Your friends and family can't relate to what you're trying to build. All your corporate friends can't, right? All of your college.
Yeah, everybody around you is on defense.
You don't have a community that you can actually.
Correct.
So we talk to people about talking to your customer. Talk to 100 people that could be the customer and learn from them. These are all basic things that kind of those of us that have done it get it. But 3 years ago, I had no clue. I was completely lost. I'm like, how do you? Most people build a product, then they go out and try to find an audience. We tell people, flip that. Find the audience first, then understand what you're building. You'll save yourself a whole bunch of headache.
Yeah, the opportunity cost of getting it wrong is so much higher than whether it's the time investment, the money investment. We talk all the time about making asymmetric upside bets. And entrepreneurship is that, right? The cost of doing an entrepreneurial move is literally 1x the time and the money you put into it. But the upside can be infinite, right? And for all these folks who have the time. And
the problem is, that's the logical part of it. The emotional part of it is the reason nobody does it is they don't want to lose in front of others.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We've said that. We've said that from one of the metaphors that we use for day one. It's literally like one of our intro slides is a CrossFit gym, right? And a CrossFit gym, I don't think I've ever been in one, but I hear the stories. I get that it's like, there's this, like you start to get like towards the top of your reps, there are people cheering you on, right? Like if you fail, if your form is bad, people are helping you correct, but it's more than a safe space. It's like encouraging to go past your boundaries.
People celebrate everybody else's personal best, regardless whether it's 100 pull-ups or 6 pull-ups. Everyone's cheering the 6 person on as much as they are the 100, which is really what entrepreneurship is.
Yeah, I mean, I think as somebody who was born to the great fortune of having a mother who cheerleaded all my entrepreneurial ventures, most parents don't do that.
Yeah.
Most parents put school on the pedestal, thus subconsciously training their child to conform to the system.
Yep.
I mean, the amount of entrepreneurial parents of emerging entrepreneurs that I get emails from, because I'm so aggressive with my anti-college, content that have helped them, is really powerful. And I'm not anti-college for everyone. I'm anti-non-self-awareness.
Yeah.
Right? So our journey, this is probably a good segue. So I hear all this, I get into it, and then I don't know if we're ready to really tell the whole world the whole thing, but one of the things that brought me to you guys was this whole track of anti-self-awareness. Back to like what I didn't pick up on when we decided to do something formally together. I actually think a lot of businesses should be formed to have a low-cost way to help you make a decision. Right? Like I wonder if people would pay $1,000 a year in their mid-20s to find out from a source that they feel has good intent if they're ready for parenting. Like, it's a wild thought, but like I would never do that because I'm just too intuitive and will go, but I think a lot of people would find solace in, you know, going through a very, I mean, look at parenting books and all that stuff. Like, it, you know, in a 360 way of gray and black and white, it, you know, I'd like to think no matter how great that startup is, that if the startup said you're 4.2 years away from parenting, that somebody wouldn't exactly wait 3.4 years to before. But I think that, you know, it really just caught my attention here in talking to you. I'm like, wow, that's actually very powerful, because that's what led me to you guys from what I've been trying to solve, which is I have, back to a studio, I have 900 ideas.
Yeah.
This was one, Resi was another, VFriends was another. And all three of those have been remarkably successful with a small group of people I teamed up with to go and execute it that I really knew. That I really knew. And the only thing that's stopping me from doing the other 39 businesses that all would dominate is having a process to have operators, what I would call COOs, or CEOs with a heavy hand for me, which has led to something we're gonna be rolling out soon together. Right, something within day one, a little sub Gary Vayner thing. But I don't think we're far enough along and we'll put out that announcement at some point. Yeah. That was awesome for me because I was gonna build that business anyway.
Yeah.
My first thought was I'm gonna buy 100 acres in Wisconsin, start a operating school because the Lindsay Blums, the Kim Garcias, the Avery, like the people that have come through Vayner that I'm like, ooh, I wonder in seven, you know, they're happening serendipitously through Vayner and the two amazing ladies that I just met mentioned, I mentioned because their life events didn't get, and my life events didn't give me the timing to say, hey, like John and Nate who did Empathy with me, their life events worked. As a matter of fact, their life events led us to selling the company. Knowing both of them were about to get engaged and like I don't think we would have sold Empathy had their life events. So life events are big.
Yeah.
Life events are big.
Yeah.
And I think that creating a framework to find out if somebody's capable to be a CEO or COO in my world is something that I've been obsessed with, and I appreciated your guys' openness to create another framework within day one. And so we'll tell you more about that as that gets closer. Vayner community, it's very close. I'm a little bit more excited about the fact that I think a lot of people that are listening to my podcast are very close to starting their own business.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to go through General Assembly or Skillshare. I mean, I saw all those companies come through.
Yeah.
This community aspect,
yeah.
And more importantly, a very low cost to get an answer excites me.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry to interrupt, last question, actually, poignant question. Of the 250, did any of them leave it, even though it might have not been built for this, saying, oh wait, I don't want to be an entrepreneur?
A couple,
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I was just catching up with a fellow who, she has an idea. She's very new to entrepreneurship. She's going up this learning curve. Life happened and she got a job offer, she took it. She told me, she's like, I'm actually using all the things I've learned in this job. And I was like, can I write your story? Because
now all of a sudden, same goddamn game, right? Which is, I mean, this was the point of my open, this is why, I'm really hoping this gets a lot of ideas running through everyone who's listening to this. We need things, this goes back to my whole, like, why don't we teach taxes in school? Like, we don't do normal shit.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that, to your point, who's winning at Vayner in my 1,800 employees? The ones that have entrepreneurial tendencies, but play within the lines.
Yeah.
Which is very powerful for an organization.
Yeah.
Of course she's doing that.
Yeah.
She's seeing different perspectives, which add to her repertoire.
Which, when you come back to the, you mentioned, just I have to say this, like if you have a job and you jump in and take a shot at entrepreneurship, you are so much more employable after the fact. You've tried things.
How about this? Things. How about if you go and fish for a year and you'll be so much more employable because people don't understand there's always gonna be a job.
Yeah.
We have to get this out to the world.
Yeah.
If you quit and scratch an itch, stay-at-home fathership, fishing for a year for mental health, being an entrepreneur because you just are curious, or anything else that I didn't mention, which is there's 77 trillion, taking care of a sick parent because you don't wanna regret when they're gone, and name 77 other viable things that will be top of mind for everybody, when you go back to get a job, it will be there.
Absolutely.
There's just jobs.
And
what people don't like doing is taking a step backwards in on their track.
Right.
Well, my friends have a home. Well, my friends all have kids now. Well, my parents were married at 30. Well, my dad made $1 million by the time he was 40. All these fucking things that have nothing to do with your life.
One of our first fellows in the first cohort, who's now the co-founder and at a luxury brand NFT company, on his exit interview, he said something that sticks with me this day. He goes, day one helps you slow down now and do the important things you can speed up later.
Hmm.
You know, talk to your customer, build a thing, figure out what you want to do. So to your earlier question, yes, we have had people raise money and go to the next round and build out, but we've also had people decide that they want to build $1 million, $2 million business. We've had people figure out that they've taken the skills and want to go back to their job and be reinvigorated. And for some people who just kind of had this idea, it's been kept them up.
It was a hobby.
It was a hobby. They just realized, but at least they validated it. They can sleep well. They can go back to their, you know what
the
I mean?
My biggest takeaway from this is, I know why insurance is such a big business.
Okay.
It's selling against fear. It's giving you peace of mind. You know, a flood, a fire, death with life insurance. I think you're tapping into something that is a huge category. If there's low cost ways to let people go through a process of answering a burning question for themselves, there's a real thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's in a lot of categories. Almost everyone listening to this right this second has a hypothesis of a business because of how entrepreneurship has become popular culture.
Yep.
Not having to quit your job and raise $1 million, which nobody knows how to fucking do. Not, you know, not a million other, like this genre of like human assistance with a layer of practicality at low cost, I think is replicatable.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there's the Skillshares, the Udemy's. That was 1.0 of ed tech, right?
Yes.
Education went online.
Yes.
You had like 500 years of university. You had like 15 years of like these platforms, and you know this pandemic accelerated by 5 to 10 years. This next thing, community driven. You still learn. There's still structure, but it's that beautiful mix of like the best college campus you can imagine, right? Where you learn by staying up late in the dorm, but you also learn from professors who care about you. You learn from a lecture from somebody that you might not agree with who comes in and talks. It's a university, but for $9.99.
It's not just expert lab. Like you said, it's in the dorms, it's staying up late, and kind of you get. So one of the other big things is like people come in thinking they're just the student, but over time,
Six months
in the community, it helps their identity, it's a mental health help. Like you really feel.
Well, listen, important. I mean, the biggest argument I get from people today who are super pro blind college parents that are friends, coming from a good place, they're like, yeah, but Gary, you know, Ricky is gonna meet people and mature there. I'm like, Ricky can go to Europe and do that. You don't need to go into 180K in
Ricky's
debt.
Ricky's gonna meet a lot of people like Ricky too.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think yes-ish, right? I think that's fair. But you know this, even at Harvard or Stanford, and I'm not even talking about gender, race, there's even as hard, like what's awesome about humans is it's true snowflake life. I agree with you. But like, even if it's high, low, middle class, whatever you go,
you gravitate towards.
I think you serendipitously run into different people's, like they might be exactly you on paper, same school, same income levels, same parents. It may look exactly the same and it's going
to
be completely different.
You get to know Charson. Yeah.
I agree with the late night thing. I think a lot about 2:30 in the morning, deep conversations.
Yeah.
So many people that went through college can immediately, as I'm talking right now, think about those first couple talks they had with who ended up becoming their core friend group, where they were finally at a mature enough state to speak about vulnerability or other things.
Yeah.
Like that moment, right? That moment.
I mean, I'm other people passionate about the same things you're passionate about.
Yes.
I mean, I'm super here for getting 100 acres in Wisconsin for the campus version of this, you know? Like, why not? Like,
I mean, for me, when we stumbled on each other, I like really want to build a infrastructure to create a way for me to judge if I believe someone can be my partner in, you know, in a world where I will come up with the idea, be the driving force for the fundraising, be the driving force for the demand.
Yep.
You know, I think somebody owning 5 to 10% of that to be the core operator is a gift. I really do.
It's gonna be life changing.
It has been for everything I've done. So I'm excited about that and building that out with you. And we'll have a lot more of that in the future of VaynerNation. Man, thank you for being on the show.
Gary, thanks for having us.
Talk to you soon.
This was awesome.
Like, comment, subscribe.
Yep. Guys, please leave comments. I mean, the likes, subscribes, I know what you want, D-Rock, but the comments for this episode specifically would be very interesting to me on the insight or the seed of the idea that maybe this podcast created. Thanks for being on again, guys. We'll see you next time.